and transdisciplinarity, which is to do with the definitions of borders and the qualitative as well as the descriptive definitional criteria for either media or for discursive practice. So with that, I'll now introduce our speakers. First off, the bat, Stephen Liddell, who is subject leader in painting at the National Art School here in Sydney.
Is this too loud or? Okay. 100 meter sprint, this is 15-20 minutes, so thank you. And my name is Stephen Liddell, and I'm a painter. So. Okay. I've only included about 5 images. I've limited them to very straightforward ones, so they just kind of mirror what it is I'm going to be talking about. So I'll just move ahead. Okay, so this paper addresses image making and its relation to painting within a transdisciplinary context. It examines the relation of nomination, ready-mades, the exemplifying properties of metaphor, characteristic resemblances that exist between different domains, and raises the self-differing aspect of mediums. This paper supports a re-imaging of painting across boundaries that traditionally have been materially defined. Today, painting can be identified across a range of material exchanges, processes, perceptual associations, and conceptual relations that accommodate exchanges between painting and traditionally non-painting contexts to take place. By exceeding the bounds of painting's material conventions and extending or problematizing an ontological conception of painting, we are presented associatively with its reenactment or restaging in a different form, the expanded field model. Painting now exists as a practice or discipline that is no longer bound to its form and material conventions. I propose that identifying painting no longer necessarily depends on an oculocentric interpretation of painting's constitution, especially given that parts of that constitution come from outside of its material configuration. So the 4 models I address here are 1, nomination, 2, metaphor, 3, Wittgenstein's treatise on family resemblance, and 4, Krauss's model of a post-material vector, where self-differing inner complexities generate their own logics and correspondences that question a conventional interpretation of medium as a materially based support. Collectively, these models show that a medium is not something that can be simply and physically located, but results from a series of alterations, changing correspondences, and complex internal engagements. If we accept that nomination maintains the objective existence of individual and concrete things while attributing the generic and the universal to linguistic conventions, then this can be employed in a pluralist engagement with language and concepts to effect change. This suggests that a language of association of abstract relations is already operating to give form to these correspondences and make them visible. Okay. One such example is the link between Duchamp's bottle rack from 1914, a drying device, and his rejection of conventional painting. On the grounds that it links to the tradition of painting through a sensorial engagement with the wetness of paint, Duchamp stresses, by association, his need to move from painting's sensualized gesturing, i.e. wet, to its conceptual engagement, dry. And what better way to emphasize this shift and give it form than with a drying device? All right, 2 is a metaphor. In Languages of Art, an approach to a theory of symbols, Nelson Goodman considers the movement of predicates part of a language that describes the subject from one realm to that of another. In language, what or whom the sentence is about represents the subject of the sentence. The predicate's role is to modify the subject in a way that tells us something about it. For example, if the subject is a person named Paul, the predicate modifies the subject and tells us that Paul ran, Paul slept, Paul sat. Goodman maintains that metaphor arises through the symbolic function of expression. He maintains that expression, as a process used for exampling or illustrating something, is itself a form of metaphorical exemplification and exists in the relation between a sample and what it refers to. In presenting metaphor as a form of transference, Goodman claims that the application of a familiar predicate to a new object or context is akin to teaching an old word new tricks, of applying an old label in a new way. This shows that metaphor facilitates the extension of a variety of correspondences already shown to exist between differently ordered domains. In the case of the blank canvas, for example, the correspondences register across domains as both painting and non-painting. Goodman's theories identify and address how a nomination and metaphor, as two distinct methods of approach, can be used to implement transference. Here, metaphor facilitates the extension of correspondences already existing between different domains. It assists with inter-domain exchange and accommodates for correlations. The point is to identify genealogical developments forming from a plurality of often contradictory positions, influence, and paradox. Family resemblance, 3. Ludwig Wittgenstein has shown that our understanding of the term relation is not always clear. He uses the term family resemblance instead to show how a thing we may identify through relation might lack distinctive traits. For example, one can say, stand roughly there, and indicate by pointing. The lack of precision used to indicate a meaning does not make the expression meaningless. Wittgenstein claims that it is the way in which a term is employed and how it is understood that are pivotal, rather than any precise meaning. Here, family resemblance is presented as the preferred analogy in connecting particular usage of the same word, e.g. painting, but it also serves to highlight the lack of boundaries or discrepancies of exactness that characterize different uses of the same concept. If similarity derives from traits of likeness, then the lack of set boundaries that characterize different uses of the same concept allow for correspondences to occur. This shows that a correlation exists between Wittgenstein's appeal to similarity and Goodman's view that a language of association, of abstract relations, is already operating to some extent to give form to these correspondences and make them visible. Okay, to show this in real terms, I've chosen to draw on an encounter I had a few years ago. The encounter took place in an exhibition of paintings from different styles and periods. Scanning the show, my eye was drawn to an empty space on the wall between two paintings. Closer inspection showed tiny holes, indicating that a painting with four mirror plates had been removed. Or had it? I felt a certain conceit in the surety that came with this assumption. How many times have individuals mistaken PowerPoints and fire hydrants for art? And if it were not a joke on the viewer, then who would propose a piece like that in a group of paintings such as these, whose genealogy spanned decades? The answer seemed obvious. I would. This moment became a valuable lesson, not about what painting can offer, but crucially, it spoke about what conventional forms, i.e. the paintings on show, albeit seen here from a particular perspective, can fail to offer painting. Letting such a failure pass unchecked would amount to sanctioning that failure and abandoning critique. A blank space between paintings, a ready-made space, had offered a more fulfilling and informative encounter with painting than any of the works on show. This episode, momentarily highlights painting's omnipresent physicality and its ability to slide between different physical and perceptual modalities. What is revealed here is a vital infrastructural understanding of painting today that, far from remaining static, has continued to extend and develop itself over time. This also signals the unfolding of a specific mythology of painting that offers a potential for appropriation and extension. I propose that this infrastructural development originated from perceptual shifts highlighted in the first instance by blank monochromatic painting and was extended by the idea that a blank ready-made canvas could be classified as painting, or at the very least as a generic signifier for painting. I suggest that while some of these associations already exist, e.g. a blank ready-made canvas equals painting, that others are still finding form. While both paths rely significantly on aspects of contingency and cultural memory, one approach seems to favor a desire for immediacy, i.e. physical, material, literal, that corresponds to a particular or traditional understanding of what agency is and does. Another approach reveals itself on a perceptual level by first noting preliminary corresponding states or presences. In short, I'm saying a particular correspondence between an everyday thing and painting can be arrived at perceptually. Here, perception proceeds in the first instance through seeing. It is after this that the perceptual experience, by its extension, invites further clarification and conceptualizing that draws on historical and theoretical positions. This seeing can take the form of the so-called space or place of painting, e.g. the wall, the frame, surface, etc., but it also connects with a variety of other associations that link to painting in other ways. This shows that a preliminary perceptual identification of sorts can take place before the idea, in inverted commas, is brought to mind and played out. I suggest that the bringing to mind of the idea is, in the first instance, instigated on a perceptual level by associative insight. This suggests that the idea that the blank canvas exists merely as a conceptual and theoretical exercise, whose actualization in practical terms has arguably never been fully realized, deserves to be re-examined. Is it enough to say that the blank canvas scenario, if that's all it really amounts to, is now valueless and deserves to be relegated to the past? Or has it managed to maintain relevance and currency by taking the form of a spectre of sorts that accords a real experiential sense of presence? I mean by this that there are instances where it seems that painting is no longer necessarily bound to the canvas, or for that matter, to the traditional understanding of painting as a medium. There have been shifts made to its constitution that have specifically focused on the work's interior and exterior space, the use of paint, lack of paint, the substitution of colour for paint, and from the framing edge of the work itself to the space it occupies on the wall or floor. Collectively, these small acts, different processes, and forms of presentation come together within a much larger sphere to generate what we see and to question the criteria used for its classification. The pictorial space that the blank now inhabits, e.g. the blank space of empty billboards in a busy street, often conjure abstract moments of specific peculiarity suggestive of a more complex position. This is where painting's traditional material and physical limits do not sufficiently support the requirements of this new dialogue, its different presentational mode, or collectively what these may propose or represent. This new physicality comes to us in our engagement with the everyday in the form of associative visual hooks or codes that bypass the use of traditional painterly materials altogether. For all intents and purposes, this physicality has been transferred into the world around us, where its tangible presence still remains, and on occasions catches our attention and momentarily refocuses our gaze. The presence I'm referring to here is not that of painting understood in a conventional sense as a single rarefied physical entity, e.g. paint on canvas, but rather one that proceeds from a plurality of associations and overlaps between different objects and their corresponding scenarios. Such scenarios suggest something more akin to a kind of omnipresent physicality that periodically appears in blank billboards, as mentioned above, or, in relation to my own studio practice, as mirrors, actions, or vacuum cleaners, etc. 4. In her text, A Voyage on the North Sea, Rosalind Krauss claims that a medium's specificity cannot be simply collapsed into the physicality of its support. She presents it as a separate, diverse, and complex interlinking of structures and conventions that are distinct from material properties and physical supports. Through this, he argues for the idea of a differential specificity, one that is aggregative and heterogeneous. Collectively, painting entails more than just its material attributes. It includes recourse to other contributing inclusions, such as fiction, reality, symbolism, subjectivity, metaphor, simulation, allegory, or exemplification, etc. Such factors posit painting as a practice whose configuration derives from its own self-differing inner complexities, what Krauss refers to as phenomenological vectors. These function as a diverse and complex interlinking of structures and conventions that are distinct from material properties and physical supports. They generate their own relationships and logics and question the validity of medium understood as a materially based support. So what concrete examples are there that do not merely stand in for the space of painting, but show it to be an active space that extends the very conception of how painting, albeit in an abstract sense, can be seen to function? It would be easy to fall back on the blank canvas in this instance, but it seems that even this would not do this point justice. The controversy surrounding the scenario of the blank canvas brought about change, this much is true. The value in this, though, is not just what the blank canvas signifies, but the passage that has been opened for painting by this signification. It seems that in this instance, the issue seems less to do with the blank canvas itself, i.e., the historic vehicle of this signification, and more with the extension of its received message into new forms and dialogues within and around painting, i.e., the signified place or space of painting. I propose that it is in response to factors such as these that the materialization of the blank canvas has, with a few notable exceptions, for example, maybe Fontana, remained all but unrealized. This is not to say that it can't or shouldn't be realized, only that such an act runs a very real risk of appearing gratuitous. For the sake of clarity, I've chosen to reference works or situations that might normally be considered as lying outside of painting. That is, situations where painting is generally deemed as being absent. The trip to the museum that I mentioned earlier is one example. Another can be found. In the work of Nouveau Realist artist César Baldassini. Generally known as César, he gained notoriety by using crushed parts of old automobiles, and his wall-hung work, Relief Toil, is unmistakable in its reference to painting. Here the work's overtly formalized pictorial presentation, suspended as it is in a stretcher frame, effects a mirroring that recalls abstract painting in shape, color, and composition. The emphasis the composition places on the side of the work, the stretcher's edge, by restricting its activity within the formal limits of the material support, echoes and exemplifies this outer edge, as if to say that this boundary is to be respected. Metaphorically, it is not just the imagined space of the canvas that is exemplified here. This is the space of any canvas, in that it becomes a zone of activity, it becomes a zone of specific activity and signification that invokes, accommodates, and sustains a discourse with painting through the designation and exemplification of a number of painting's properties or familiar characteristics. Perceptually, this visual indicator lends a more physical and tangible sense of presence to the proceedings. This heightened state of direct association effectively amplifies the level of visual quotation that exists here and links the thing we are looking at, here car parts, with another thing altogether that we are already seeing, the acknowledged space of painting. So what was originally only associatively symbolic in this use of metaphor now becomes visually apparent and physically present. I propose that this signals a significant affirmation of how a semi-dematerialized aspect of painting can be accredited with inhabiting real space through another's form. This exists in the first instance as a visual hook, the seeing of which instigates a perceptual correspondence with the known space of painting. Similarly, I propose that this visual zone or spatial vector's hook is an extension of the blank canvas's role of standing in for what is absent, and that this phenomenological zone has been developing continuously since the 1960s. So where the scenario of the blank canvas was originally understood as being just that, a theoretical scenario, I propose that an acknowledgement of these properties, as and when they show themselves, actually credits this phenomenological zone with moments of tangibility that argue against the view that it is a purely theoretical proposition. The bottom line, then, is that it grants these semi-dematerialized aspects of painting a tangible physical presence that is identified and singled out in the first instance by seeing, and in this count, it is more than just theoretical. Okay, a painting retains traces of the different processes involved in its creation. Some of these processes are present in the making, that is, the physical, while others present themselves in the activity of choosing, conceptual, but all exist as part of the constitution of its making. As such, painting's reconstitution, as an enterprise that should not necessarily depend on paint, represents the activity understood here as discipline or practice, as a somewhat differently configured entity and one that is constantly open to change. It is my belief that these constituent elements are open to variation and that they offer potential for the constant reconfiguring, and renewal of these variable elements while retaining and exemplifying the disciplinary embodiment as painting. I posit the plausibility of painting being understood as a discipline. As such, it would no longer be reliant on the idea of a self-regulating medium in regard to the work's material constitution. Instead, it can force such ideas into question to the point where the use of paint itself is marginalized or made to appear unnecessary. This paper effectively questions conventional terms of reference, i.e. the material traditions or common denominators that historically have informed and arguably entrenched specific art forms. I contend that terms such as disciplinary definition, as noted in the call for abstracts, are now too unspecific, misleading, and at worst prescriptive. How do we choose to define discipline, under what terms, and whose agenda? While supporting a reapprehension of the image, this paper stresses the folly of viewing disciplinary boundaries today as markers of an outmoded, materially led ideological framework. The folly of this is highlighted by the notion that, as a discipline, painting today is no longer bound to its former material tradition, a tradition that, until the 20th century, had historically informed its terms of reference. The acknowledged boundaries of disciplinary definition rests, I believe, on an outmoded idea of discipline, evades the bigger issue of what the term discipline may now entail, and echoes, or at very least appears to condone, a more essentialist view of disciplinary boundaries. Thank you.